Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, Chris Cameron, author of Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella. Chris, did you sing from a very early age? What got you into opera at all?
Well, Gwyn, I never sang a note, except for some character roles in high school musicals, until I was 16. But that year, I got myself a job as an extra, or what they call a supernumerary. Actually, I was a prisoner of war dressed in nothing but a very skimpy loincloth in the Canadian Opera Company production of Aida. And so being on the stage with the entire triumphal scene going on around me, I felt like I'd found a home. I never wanted to leave. It felt like jumping into a warm bath. It was just, I knew that's where I wanted to be. Of course, at that age, I never saw myself becoming an actual opera singer. To me, they all seemed to be these giant people, and they sang louder than I could ever hope to. So over the years, I didn't get much bigger, but my voice got louder, and I spent a lot of time singing in choirs, including 3 years with Elmer Eisler back in the early 70s, while my voice matured. And finally, when I was about 24, I joined the Canadian Opera Company, and I was given a small solo part almost immediately afterwards.
Oh, congratulations. So, performing with the COC, did you do any tours, or were you in any other opera companies?
Well, absolutely, yes. I spent a lot of my career on the road, in fact, most of it. And I spent a lot of it on tour with the COC, because in addition to our main stage season in Toronto, we had a tour that went out every year. But I spent a good deal of the year also performing with smaller companies, like Opera Lyra in Ottawa and Pacific Opera in Victoria. I also worked almost every year, well, every year probably, with the opera companies in Winnipeg and Calgary and Edmonton. So I was out of town a lot, and it began to wear on me after years and years of that. And it got especially hard after my daughter was born in 1987. So that's when I began to look for something else to do.
Yeah. So that was one challenge. Were there any other challenges to being an opera singer?
No, none at all. Absolutely not.
Easy peasy.
I'd have to say that the greatest challenge is having the voice in the first place. And singing opera in this huge cavernous theater in front of thousands of people with a whole orchestra blasting away is a lot to ask of a few strands of sinew and tissue in your throat. I remember the days of performances. I used to wander around our apartment making all sorts of strange mooing and humming. So I'd go, hum, 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 hum. And my wife would ask from the other room, is it there? That she meant my voice. There always seemed to be so much insecurity about whether my voice that I had last night would be present again tonight. There's one other thing, too, about having a voice. My wife is a cellist. She's a very good cellist. She had to pay many thousands of dollars for her instrument, and I got mine
for free,
which is great. But my wife's cello never gets sick, and when I was sick, I usually couldn't sing. Singers spend a long time and a lot of time trying to keep from catching bugs, and many will go to bizarre lengths, I won't even go into what they are, to avoid being either exposed to one or to recover from one if they do catch something. yes, our bodies are our instruments, but they're all we have. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Now, your book is a lighthearted book. It's not a dreary thing, so there's got to be some humorous incidents in there. Can you maybe relate one or so?
Yes, there is. In fact, the humor is probably the major part of the book. I had the choice of putting in a lot of angst-ridden moments from my artistic crises that I went through, but I found I didn't have any.
Good choice. It turned
out to be just it. So anyway, I hope it's an entertaining book. But many years ago, I did a fair amount of singing with a guy named Ben Heppner. Ben went on to be just about the biggest international superstar Wagnerian supertenor there ever was, at least Canadian. And nowadays, he's the host of CBC's Saturday Afternoon at the Opera and some other shows. But back in the early 1980s, he and I were just young singers starting out at the COC. One Christmas, we did an opera called A Mall and the Night Visitors, which is the story of a young shepherd boy who's visited by the three kings when they're on their way to Bethlehem. And the king that Ben had to play is supposed to have a parrot. So they got Ben a real live parrot named Crackers to carry on his shoulder, which he did. And Crackers sat right at his shoulders. Now, Crackers had once worked with a stripper.
Uh-oh.
And in the stripper's act, Crackers would bite the buttons off her costume one by one. Well, as you can imagine, old habits die hard. And all through the show of the opera, we could hear the sound of buttons hitting the floor as Crackers plucked them off Ben's costume. Luckily, he had more buttons available than the stripper had.
That is hilarious. I mean, it was a long career, but is there a moment that you would say is your, you know, the ultimate moment, your best moment?
I'd like to read you, the next time I read my story to you, I'd like to read a story that describes what I think is my very best moment.
Oh, perfect.
So I saved that one. But for, to me, it was a career filled with best moments, and so much of it seemed to happen by chance. In Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella, I wanted to describe, from my own personal point of view, what it was like for me, an ordinary high school kid from Scarborough, to fall into the life of a working professional singer in Canada, and what it was like to live that life. It's a life that's offered to only a precious few in this age and this part of the world, and I've never gotten over how fortunate I was to have had it offered to me.
Hmm. What a lovely way to be. So many of us don't like our careers, so that's wonderful. So will there be another book?
Well, there's always another book, Gwen, you know that. Whether it's written or not, that's the question. Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella has a lot of humor in it, as we've said. At least I hope the readers think so. I did a reading a couple of weeks ago in Toronto where there was dead silence after I finished what I thought would get a laugh, so you never know. Anyway, I realized that I enjoyed writing humor, so I'm currently working on some short stories that I devoutly hope are funny.
Yeah. Well, the fact that your book went off to the Stephen Leacock, an award application, I don't know what you call it, that's in itself says that your publisher believes it's a humorous book. So there you go.
Well, I think so.
So let's read about this wonderful moment.
As I mentioned, this excerpt is about one of the most amazing things, unexpected things that can happen during a live performance. And it's from a chapter in the book called Maiden, Come and Join Me. In the spring of 1987 in Victoria, I got the chance to sing the role I'd been waiting for all my life, Papageno, the birdcatcher, in Mozart's Magic Flute. Papageno is a classic rustic, a true everyman. He wants nothing to do with heroics or villainy, but he desires only enough food, wine, and freedom to live through each day and into the next. All he lacks for a perfect life is a wife, a soulmate to share his happiness. Mozart also gave him some of the most fun music to sing that there is in any opera. Papageno was my soulmate. He was a dream role for me. Not only did his musical range lie within the best part of my voice, but he was me physically and dramatically, and this was a happy departure from the usual chubby buffoons I was given to play. Papageno, youthful, innocent, and charming, set me free to act and sing as I wanted. I ran and hopped and flew around the stage like a bird released from its cage. It was a magical flute. Our English translation was rich and witty. The costumes were colorful and whimsical. Our director made our spoken dialogue sparkle with wit and heart. Timothy Vernon was our maestro as usual, and I trusted him with every note. And there were positive reviews and applause and cheers that washed over us every night like welcome rain. After we opened, the production proved so popular that an extra show was added, underwritten by Jim Monroe of Monroe's Books in Victoria. The rest of the cast even graciously granted my character the last bow in the curtain calls, an honor usually reserved for the heroic tenor or soprano. But what I've kept closest to me from that production is one special moment of one performance etched as clearly as a tintype on my memory. Papageno's second act aria reveals him alone on a darkened stage. He's playing the set of magic bells he's been given and pondering his need to find a wife to make his life complete. Oh, maiden, come and join me, be Papageno's wife. One evening, as I began the aria, I noticed a little girl sitting in the front row just across the narrow orchestra pit from me. She was seated between her parents, all dressed up for the opera, and sitting straight in rapt and serious attention so as not to miss anything. I could almost have reached out and touched her. Instead, I walked over to the edge of the stage, sat down, and sang to her. Oh, maiden, come and join me, be Papageno's wife. The beam from my spotlight also caught the little girl and illuminated the air between us like a bridge. As I sang, a secret smile kept trying to steal its way onto her face and break her concentration, but she wouldn't allow it to. She stared back at me, wide-eyed and unblinking, still as a statue, as if to move even a single muscle would end the spell forever. Somewhere below me, in the orchestra, the celesta was sweetly tinkling the music of my magic bells, accompanied by the soft murmur of the strings. But we remained surrounded by the darkness and enclosed in a beam of light as I sang, A little dove beside me would bless me all my life. When I finally danced away to finish the aria, the rest of the audience joined us, time resumed, the bridge of light dissolved, and life went on. but the gift remained. A seamless, effortless communion between fantasy and reality, between performer and listener. And it was not difficult to believe that there might have been some magic in Papageno's bells, after all.
Oh, how delightful. I'm really curious to know if that, what effect that had on her life. It'd be amazing to find out.
Interesting footnote to that. I was back in Victoria several months afterwards to do a concert, and her father brought her and a couple of her siblings down to one of the rehearsals. So we actually got to meet.
Oh, wonderful. Well, many thanks, Christopher, for coming in today. Christopher Cameron has been telling us about his memoir, Dr. Bartolo's Umbrella and Other Tales from My Surprising Operatic Life. So where can listeners buy your book, Christopher?
Well, locally. The last I heard, well, I know, there's a copy in Lighthouse Books in Brighton and another couple at Kerr's Corner Books in Campbellford. And if you can't get to these places, the best way to order is to order from Amazon.ca. They're very quick. You can also contact my publisher, Seraphim Editions. Now, I also do editing, and there are several ways to get a hold of me as an editor. I'm very approachable. The fastest way is to email me at caspian52, that's caspian52@gmail.com. And you can also find me through the Editors Canada website.
Okay. And listeners, to connect with us, please send us your comments, queries, or suggestions of whom we might interview in future programs to our website, wordonthehills.com. At our website, you'll find all our programs archived and available for listening to anytime and anywhere. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again for another program next week, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.